This is another edition of the More Abundant Life radio broadcast. My name is Adrian Westney Jr., your host for today's program. Pastor Phipps has chosen to present to us today a message entitled, Who is Your Brother? The question will be asked, and the question will be answered. Who is your brother? I urge you to stay tuned as we examine this topic, a topic that really applies to all of us here, both men and women, boy and girl. Who is our brother? Before we get into the message today, though, Pastor Phipps is going to present to us some music. Music entitled, We Will Be Free. It's a song from the CD release entitled, A Love Like This by Pastor Whitley Phipps. Let's enjoy the music now. We Will Be Free.
In the morning of creation, God placed a dream in every beating heart. A dream that freedom would be forever. But somehow that dream has all come apart. But there's still some time to change our mind. Truth and faith is the key.
Are listening to the More Abundant Life radio broadcast. My name is Adrian Westney, your host for today's program. We just heard music from Whitley Phipps. The song was entitled We Will Be Free, and that reaches back a little bit into the archives of the Whitley Phipps music collection. This song actually comes from the release entitled A Love Like This by Pastor Whitley Phipps. We're going to get to the message now, the message for today. Who is your brother? Here's Pastor Phipps with that message.
In the summer of 1963, the United States of America was in the midst of deepening social and racial strife. The eyes of the world were on this young nation, trying to come to terms with a vexing legacy of slavery racial division, and legal segregation. Whites and blacks were marching and dying together, seeking to break the back of hatred, prejudice, bigotry, and injustice. Newspapers from around the world carried headlines reporting on the constant clashes between demonstrators and police. Dogs, fire hoses, tear gas, all of these were familiar scenes on the nightly television news programs because they were used against those who were protesting the evil system of segregation. Young students were being beaten at lunch counters, and homes of many of the leaders of the movement were being bombed. It was the summer of 1963. It was a tense and pivotal hour in America's history. All these many mass demonstrations in America's cities finally culminated in a march on Washington. That day, 250,000 people of all races and all ethnic backgrounds waited in the sweltering August heat to hear the voice of America's modern-day prophet of nonviolent protest and brotherly love. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. stepped up to the podium on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and delivered what would go down in history as one of the greatest appeals to the conscience of any nation. With consummate eloquence, Dr. King challenged America to live out the meaning of its creed, that all men were created equal, and that they were endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, rights of life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. That speech changed the course of American history, and this nation would never again be the same. For many people, that was the first time they had heard the voice of this eloquent Baptist preacher from Atlanta, Georgia. But somehow I believe that that was just one of the moments for which Dr. King was born. It was a moment for which he had consciously, or perhaps unconsciously, spent his whole life preparing. Let me read you something from one of Dr. King's speeches. Please listen to these words very carefully. He wrote, "We cannot have an enlightened democracy with one great group living in ignorance. We cannot have a healthy nation with one-tenth of the people ill-nourished, sick, harboring germs of disease which recognize no color lines and who obey no Jim Crow laws. We cannot have a nation orderly and sound with one group so ground down and thwarted that it is almost forced into unsocial attitudes and crime. We cannot be truly Christian people so long as we flaunt the central teachings of Jesus's brotherly love and the golden rule. We cannot come to full prosperity with one great group so ill-delayed that it cannot buy goods. So as we gird ourselves to defend democracy from foreign attack, let us see to it that increasingly at home we give fair play and free opportunity for all people. The spirit of Lincoln still lives. That spirit born of the teachings of the Nazarene, who promised mercy to the merciful, who lifted the lowly, who strengthened the weak, who ate with publicans and made the captives free. In the light of this divine example, the doctrines of demagogues shiver in their chaff. Already closer understanding links Saxon and freedman in mutual sympathy. America, he wrote, experiences a new birth of freedom in her sons and daughters. She incarnates the spirit of her martyred chief. Their loyalty is repledged, their devotion renewed to the work he left unfinished. My heart throbs anew in the hope that, inspired by the example of Lincoln, imbued with the spirit of Christ, they will cast down the last barrier to perfect freedom, and that I, with my brother of blackest hue, possessing at last my rightful heritage and holding my head erect, may stand beside the Saxon, a Negro, and yet a man. Now, the reason I said that I believe Dr. King was preparing all his life for that moment, and that moment on the steps of the Capitol, and for the mission to fight for freedom, is because this amazing speech of Dr. King, from which I have just read a portion, was written and delivered by Dr. King in April of 1944, when Dr. King was only 15 years old. Even then, one could sense that God had his hands on that young man, and that truly he was headed for greatness. In 1964, 25 years later, this insightful 15-year-old, a mature 35 years of age now, gave that historic I Have a Dream speech from the steps of the Lincoln Monument. That same year, 1964, he was voted Time Magazine's Man of the Year. And in December of 1964, he became the recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize. Things were going well for Dr. King, but 4 years later, there came another fateful day, again in the month of April. And many of us can still remember that fourth day in April in 1968. Dr. King was trying to help garbage workers who were striking in Memphis. Shots rang out, and Dr. King was lying in a pool of blood on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel. In one short split second, a bullet silenced one of America's most important social and prophetic voices of the 20th century. And in his final apocalyptic speech, the night before his death, the world heard Dr. King on April the 3rd, as it were, delivering his own eulogy. In that speech, Dr. King said, "Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. And I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything," he said. "I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord." That speech was captured in a film called Montgomery to Memphis. And I'll never forget the first time I saw that speech was in that film. It changed my life completely. I will always remember where I was, how I felt. That speech placed squarely before me the sobering reality that those who fight against injustice must prepare to face the fiery darts of evil. And I remember as I sat there watching Dr. King's speech, I made a covenant with God in my seat that day. I asked God to help me be that kind of man, a man who had the strength to stand up for what he believed, a man who had the courage, if God should require it, to die for what he believed. Now we always hear the end of that speech by Dr. King. But in that speech, the night before he died, Dr. King preached about that day when a lawyer approached Jesus with a doctrinal question. This young lawyer had come not in search of light or wisdom. He was sent to put the theology of Jesus to the test. You see, the clergy of his day had raised doubts about the orthodoxy of Christ's theology. And so this young lawyer, possessed with a brilliant, incisive intellect, sought to trap Jesus on a point of dogma and theology. "Master," he said, "tell me, what can I do to inherit eternal life?" "As you read it," said Jesus, "what does the law say to you?" "Young man, what have you found in the sacred scrolls? How do you interpret it?" This young, clever attorney, seeking to embroil Jesus in this doctrinal debate, found that Jesus refused to quarrel with him. You don't meet argument with argument. The young man's answer can be found in Luke 10:27. "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy strength, with all thy mind, and thy neighbor as thyself." And Jesus said unto him, "Thou hast answered right. This do, and you shall live." But he willingly, said the Apostle Luke, chapter 10, verse 29, he willing to justify himself, said unto Jesus, "Okay, who is my neighbor?" Jesus answered him, saying, "A certain man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, fell among robbers. They beat him, stripped him of his clothes, left him for dead. A certain priest, a fellow member of his church, a brother in his denomination, happened to be going by. When he saw the man half dead, he glanced at the man in passing and went by on the other side. And so too a Levite, an intern, an assistant in the temple, a brother, you know, like my brother. He also came along and he stopped. He went over to investigate the situation. He bent over this stranger battling for his life, and the Levite's heart swelled with the conviction that he should help. But as the Levite stood there over this tragic and pitiful scene, he began to wish that he hadn't even taken that road to Jericho. He must have said to himself, "If I hadn't taken this road, I wouldn't have to deal with this decision." He finally told himself, "You know something? He is my brother, but this is really none of my business. If I stop to say something or do something, those who hurt him might hurt me. Besides, this man is good as dead. His case is hopeless. I'm not going to fight a hopeless battle, even if the cause is right." Have you ever heard religious people back away from justice, back away from right doing, because they believed the battle was hopeless? You don't back away from right doing just because the cause seems hopeless. Well, it wasn't long before a certain nameless Samaritan came passing by. He didn't stop to think about his own personal safety. All he knew was that every man was his brother and that his brother needed his help. He didn't stop to consider the man's race. He didn't stop to consider his language, his place of national origin. All he knew was that this man was his brother. This Samaritan believed that kindness and brotherly love should never be determined by another person's creed or doctrine or race. No matter the nationality, Every part of suffering humanity deserves our compassion. The Samaritan took off his own garment, said Jesus, covered the helpless victim. He took the oil and wine he had carried for his own journey, prepared it as a balm, and poured it into the sufferer's wounds. This ointment of his own creation, blessed of God, refreshed and began to heal the victim's wounds. The Samaritan then lifted the victim, placed the man on his own beast, and made his way slowly down the road so that no greater trauma would come to his wounds. He carried him to an inn and there stayed up all night watching and nursing this stranger who was his brother. When the morning came, because the wounded man had improved considerably, the Samaritan placed him in the care of the innkeeper. He paid the charges and left an imprint of his American Express card. He left a promissory note, a word of credit for the future. See to his care, said the Samaritan. Whatever you spend, I personally will take care of it. The good Samaritan wasn't concerned about what kind of bill this man would run up in food and medicines. He didn't ask him to shut down the phone so he couldn't make long distance charges. No, just help him get better, and whatever you spend, I'll take care of it. Now, a young man said, Jesus, which of these three men proved to be a true friend, a true neighbor, a true brother? Why, the one who showed pity and mercy, said the young lawyer. Well, now you go, said Jesus, and do the same. Brothers and sisters, there are those Christians who believe. And I preach this message today in honor of that prophet of nonviolence, in honor of the life, work, and legacy Dr. King. January 15th was his birthday. And I want you to know there are those Christians who believe that only fellow Christians of their race are their brothers and sisters. There are those Christians who believe that only fellow Christians of their ethnicity are their real brothers and sisters. There are those Christians who believe that only fellow brothers and fellows in their caste and station and economic station in life are their brothers and sisters. There are those Christians who even believe that only members of their particular denomination are their brothers and sisters. And yes, it is true, Christians are uniquely brothers and sisters by the new birth. But we are brothers once by creation, twice by redemption. Listen to these words from my favorite writer. The life of Christ established a religion in which there is no caste, a religion by which Jew and Gentile, free and bond, are linked in a common brotherhood, equal before God. No question of political policy influenced the movements of Christ. He made no difference between neighbors and strangers, friends and enemies. This is the God you serve. God's word is honor all men, love the brotherhood, show all men respect, though they do not reach the standard you have set for them. They may have made mistakes, she says, but is your life faultless? Have you censured your own errors as severely as you have censured the errors of others? And who can forget the plaintive cry of that sufferer to his oppressor? Am I not a man and brother too? Henry Martin Field once said, there is no brotherhood of man without the fatherhood of God. Yeah. And listen to these inspired words. I came across this beautiful poem. Sounds like it was written by a child, but it's just so beautiful. The words go, when I was small, I knew no color or creed at all. Since then, of course, I grew. Now I know Negro, Gentile, and Jew. Please, dear Lord, let me always be small, that I may never see color or creed at all. As my friend Billy Graham once said, our world has become a neighborhood without becoming a brotherhood. And today I point America and the church back to the Jericho Road. For there on that Jericho Road for all time, Jesus answered that question, who is my brother? Who shall I treat as my brother? There on the Jericho Road, Jesus taught us that regardless of color, race, class, or denomination, your brother is anybody who needs you. Your brother's anybody who needs your help. There on that Jericho Road, Jesus for all time was telling our world and the church that one of our biggest challenges, the biggest challenge we would face as a church, is the same challenge those two religious people faced on the Jericho Road. And the challenge is one of brotherhood. Can we live like brothers?
Well, that brings us to the end of our message for today, and just about to the end of our program for today. But before we actually end the program, we got a couple of announcements. First of all, I hope you enjoyed the program and understood the message today. If you would like to obtain an audio copy of this message, here's what you need to do. You need to call the Seabrook Church office, and that phone number is 301-577-6342. The phone number again there at the Seabrook Church office is 301-577-6342. You will want to refer to and ask for program number 270. That's program number 270, which will give us the title, Who is Your Brother? Here at The More Abundant Life, we are always appreciative of our listeners for their prayers, their support, comments, financial contributions. Those are most appreciated, and we'd like you to know that. Until next time, this is Adrian Westney. I do hope that you will join us again for another program. But until you can, remember the words written in John chapter 10, verse 10. That's where Jesus said, I came that you might have life, and that that life might be the more abundant life.
In your heart.